Welcome to today's deep dive. If you're tuning in, I know a bit about how you operate.
Oh, definitely.
You love to learn, you pick up concepts quickly,
yeah.
But you absolutely despise information overload.
Right. Nobody has time for that.
Exactly. You are constantly on the hunt for that next big, you know, aha moment, that one piece of knowledge that just clicks into place and completely shifts how you see the world around you.
And you are in the perfect place today for that.
For sure.
Uh-huh.
Because we are unpacking a topic that is going to fundamentally change your perspective on technology, on accessibility, and, well, how we design our lives.
It really is a paradigm-shifting subject. Today, we are looking closely at everyday assistive technology for autism.
Yeah, and the core mission of this deep dive is to explore how incredibly simple everyday tools can profoundly transform daily routines.
Radically reduce stress.
Yes, reduce stress, and most importantly, foster real, sustainable independence for autistic children, teens, and adults.
We're pulling our insights today from a really comprehensive guide put together by AngelSense. They're a company specializing in AI-based assistive technology and GPS tracking, specifically designed for individuals with special needs.
But here's the hook, the thing that really grabbed my attention when we started digging into this material. When you or I hear the phrase assistive technology, what immediately comes to mind?
Usually something very clinical.
Right. We picture something highly clinical. We imagine sterile therapy rooms, specialized school programs, or, I don't know, heavy medical equipment.
Exactly. But the truth hidden in this research is that the most life-changing tech isn't happening in a clinic at all.
Not even close. It's happening right in the middle of a living room.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening during the absolute chaos of a Tuesday morning routine.
Or on a random trip to the local grocery store.
Yeah, and that is such a vital distinction to make right out of the gate. Because when we talk about everyday assistive technology, or everyday AT as the guys calls it, we are talking about literally any device, tool, or piece of software that supports daily tasks and improves accessibility.
The absolute highest priority here isn't how advanced the microchip is.
Right. No one cares if it uses blockchain or the latest AI model.
No, the priority is pure ease of use. It has to be intuitive and functional for both the autistic individual and their caregivers.
Because if it's too complicated to operate on a chaotic morning when everyone is rushing out the door, it simply isn't helpful.
It just becomes another source of stress.
Exactly. Now, I want to push on that word tech for a second because it feels like it could be a bit misleading. Usually when we say tech, we assume it involves a glowing screen, a lithium-ion battery, a Wi-Fi connection.
Which isn't always the case.
Right. Looking at this everyday AT spectrum from the guide, that's clearly not the case. The material breaks this down into three distinct tiers, starting with low tech. And these are tools that require absolutely no electrical power whatsoever, right?
None at all. And honestly, often these are the most reliable tools in the arsenal.
What are some examples?
Well, we're talking about a visual schedule pinned to the refrigerator. We're talking about weighted blankets for sensory input, simple fidget toys, and laminated picture cards used for learning and basic communication.
So literally just physical objects.
Yes. There are no batteries to die, no software updates to wait for, no charging cables to lose. It is just immediate practical utility.
I mean, if you've ever felt the panic of your phone dying right when you need your mobile boarding pass at the airport, you can understand the immense value of something that never needs to be plugged in.
Absolutely. But then we do step up to the mid-tech tier.
Right, which seems to introduce some simple electronics into the mix.
Yes. Mid-tech brings in straightforward single-function electronics. Think about basic reminder apps on a smartphone that help guide everyday routines.
Or those push-button toys.
Exactly. Those toys that help teach vocabulary by sounding out words when you press a picture. We also see what are called voice output communication aids, or VOCAs, in this category.
VOCAs, okay.
Yeah, these are relatively straightforward devices that pronounce specific words aloud when activated. They serve a dual purpose of helping the individual learn language and communicate a need right in the moment.
Which naturally leads us to the high-tech tier, where things get significantly more complex.
This is where you find your advanced electronics.
Right. Noise reduction headphones with active cancellation, tablets loaded with specialized software, virtual reality headsets, which I definitely want to dig into later because the application there is wild to me.
It really is. You also have GPS trackers for safety and advanced speech-to-text and text-to-speech assistance.
So if we pull back and look at the bigger picture here, having this wide spectrum of tools ranging from a laminated picture card all the way to a VR headset, is incredibly important for families.
It means they can completely tailor their approach.
They can make choices based on the autistic individual's current cognitive load.
Meaning how much mental energy they have available to process information.
Right, and their specific sensory needs on any given day. Families aren't forced into overly complicated, expensive solutions when a low-tech option might actually be far more effective and significantly less overwhelming. Let's talk about communication next, because giving someone a voice when they are struggling to find their own seems like the most foundational step. The research highlights high-tech AAC.
Which stands for augmentative and alternative communication.
Specifically, text-to-speech and speech-to-text tools. Now, I could easily see how text-to-speech allows a nonverbal individual to clearly express their needs. But what about individuals who are fully capable of speaking? Why do they need this tech?
That is a crucial question, and it's something often misunderstood by the general public. We tend to think of nonverbal as a permanent, absolute state.
Right, like an on-off switch.
Exactly. But it's equally important for those who can speak but might be experiencing a sensory overload or a massive spike in anxiety.
Like during a meltdown.
Yes. During a meltdown, the neurological pathways required to form words and physically speak can essentially shut down. The ability to articulate just vanishes.
Wow.
So having a device that can speak for them in that specific moment removes a massive barrier of frustration. They aren't trapped inside their own head.
I imagine the result of removing that barrier is huge. You would get smoother transitions between activities, a sense of predictability, and most importantly, independence.
Total game changer for independence.
If you think about it, an autistic teenager being able to confidently order their own food at a restaurant, or ask a store clerk a question using a text-to-speech app, they're suddenly interacting with non-caretakers in public seamlessly.
And it's amazing that highly capable AAC smartphone apps are everywhere now. Some of the best ones mentioned in the material are entirely free.
But I have to ask, if I hand a fragile, expensive iPad to someone who is actively having a meltdown, isn't there a huge risk of that device getting thrown or smashed?
You've hit on exactly why the low and mid-tech alternatives remain incredibly popular and utterly essential.
Because they're tough.
Right. Despite the power of those high-tech apps, durability is a massive practical factor. A tablet can run out of battery or, as you pointed out, shatter if it's dropped or thrown during a moment of high distress.
Whereas low-tech tools never need recharging and are often virtually indestructible. I was looking into how these non-digital options work, and I came across this intensely academic term in the research, the pragmatic organization dynamic display.
It's quite a mouthful.
It sounds like a complex piece of Silicon Valley software, but it's actually just a highly structured picture book, right?
Precisely. It is a fancy term for a binder filled with symbols and words organized in a very specific, intuitive way so the individual can point to what they need.
And alongside that, you have mid-tech programmable speech buttons.
Yes. Caregivers can customize these durable hard plastic buttons with an individual's favorite expressions or urgent needs.
I love that. Sometimes just hitting a big red button that loudly says, "I need a break," can completely diffuse the stressful situation before it escalates.
It gives them immediate agency.
Which perfectly transitions into how we manage the physical spaces where these situations actually occur.
Yeah.
Let's look at curating the environment and utilizing sensory supports.
This is a huge component of the Angel Sense Guide.
And I noticed something counterintuitive when I was looking through this material. We usually associate autism with needing to block out sensory input, like wearing earplugs to avoid loud noises or hiding from bright lights. But the data suggests that's only half the story.
It is a fascinating duality. Sensory processing is a massive component of the autistic experience, but it manifests in two distinct ways.
Okay, break that down for us.
On one hand, you have individuals who are sensory avoidant, where a bright fluorescent light, a loud siren, or even the specific scratchy texture of a seat fabric can trigger a severe adverse reaction.
The classic representation we often hear about.
Right. But on the exact same spectrum, you have autistic individuals who are sensory seekers. They actively crave strong sensory input.
So they want more noise, more light.
Yes. They might absolutely love staring at strong, bright lights, listening to music at maximum volume, or seeking out deep physical pressure. It's fundamentally about finding regulation, not just reduction.
Okay, so for those who do need to mute the world, the tools for environmental control seem highly effective. We are talking about noise-canceling headphones to block out chaotic environments, swapping out harsh fluorescents for soft lighting bulbs, using blackout curtains to control natural light, and even installing sound-absorbing wall panels to dampen the echo in a room.
All brilliant everyday adaptations.
But what really caught my eye was the smart home integration, using an assistant like Alexa.
How so? What stood out to you about that?
Well, I always hear debates about screen time and whether we are making kids too dependent on technology. Doesn't relying on Alexa or a tablet to control the room create an unhealthy tech dependency?
It's a valid concern, but we have to differentiate between passive entertainment and active accessibility.
That makes sense.
When an autistic individual uses a smart assistant to say, Alexa, dim the lights, or Alexa, turn down the music, or to change the thermostat, they aren't zoning out in front of a video game. They are exercising agency over their own physical comfort.
So it's about control.
It's about self-advocacy. Instead of a parent constantly having to monitor and adjust the room, the individual learns to recognize their own sensory needs and independently modify their environment. That agency is vital for their development.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And speaking of regulating the nervous system, let's talk about tools to self-soothe.
This is where we see physical tools providing that deep regulation. Weighted blankets are fantastic for providing deep pressure therapy, which calms the nervous system.
I've heard amazing things about those.
They're incredibly effective. There are also spinners for visual and tactile input, chewable jewelry for oral sensory seekers, which saves a lot of shirt collars from being chewed through.
Oh, boy.
Wobble seats that allow for continuous movement while sitting at a desk, and sensory-friendly clothing that removes irritating seams and tags entirely.
But you can't just stay in a perfectly curated, sensory-friendly house forever. If you're listening to this, you know that eventually you have to leave the house. The guide introduces this concept of the portable sensory kit. It's exactly what it sounds like, but it seems like a crucial strategy. When you are navigating crowds, going to community events, or just running errands, having a backpack ready with those noise-canceling headphones, the chewable jewelry, and the fidgets can literally be the difference between a successful outing and an incredibly stressful one.
It absolutely is. But this raises an important question. How do we build on that physical and sensory comfort to foster daily independence?
Right.
That brings us to what the research describes regarding organization and routine.
The routine paradox. I found this fascinating. The challenge is that autistic individuals might really struggle with the basic sequential tasks of daily life. Brushing teeth, waking up on time, remembering to pack a backpack, doing homework.
The executive functioning aspect.
Yes. The executive functioning required for those steps, the brain's internal manager that helps us sequence and plan out basic tasks, can lead to them feeling totally overwhelmed. Yet the paradox is that they typically absolutely love routines and organization. They deeply crave the predictability of knowing what happens next.
It's a challenging paradox. It's somewhat like wanting a perfectly clean house, but being completely paralyzed by the thought of going to the closet, getting the vacuum, plugging it in, and starting.
The desire for the end result is there, but the initiation of the steps is blocked.
Exactly. Everyday AT solves this beautifully by bridging the gap between craving routine and struggling to initiate it.
So reminder devices are the bridge then.
They make routine second nature. You have your standard visual and audio timers. Even just using Siri on a phone to set a 5-minute warning before a transition to a new activity helps immensely.
Just a simple heads up.
Right. But there are also specialized tools like special needs scheduling apps. The material specifically mentions one called Timo, which is designed to visually map out the day using icons and color codes in a way that significantly reduces cognitive load.
I was also blown away by the wearables. There are wearable reminder devices now that don't just buzz to tell you it's 2 p.m. They feature location sensors and even stress detection.
The tech is getting incredibly sophisticated.
They can physiologically sense when the user's heart rate is spiking and prompt them through the watch phase to use a calming strategy before a meltdown even occurs.
It's proactive rather than reactive.
But keeping with our theme of a broad tech spectrum, it's not all digital. There are physical organizers too.
Physical organization directly builds autonomy. A great example from the text is a simple plastic pill organizer.
Something you can buy at any pharmacy.
Exactly. Instead of a parent managing the medication bottles and handing over pills every morning, putting the autistic individual in charge of their own daily pill organizer builds a profound sense of independence.
And it removes a point of friction.
Yes. The same logic applies to their physical environment. Using color-coded storage bins with distinct, easy-to-read labels keeps their room and their school gear ready to go. It completely removes the executive functioning anxiety of searching for lost items when they are already feeling rushed.
Okay, so we've established the tools for comfort, communication, and routine. But the research makes a very strong, almost jarring pivot here. I want to make sure we emphasize this for you listening.
It's the most critical section.
The guide states that if a family is going to invest in only one category of everyday AT, it should be safety tools. Period. Why is that the absolute priority above everything else?
Think of it as a hierarchy of needs. Before we can even talk about using an iPad to order food at a restaurant or using an app to schedule homework, we have to ensure physical safety.
Right.
In a crisis, when everyday routine breaks down, nothing else matters. And the most serious crisis many families face is the challenge of wandering, which is clinically known as elopement.
Can you define elopement in this context? Because to most people, that word means running away to get married.
In the context of opism, elopement is a terrifying reality where an individual might suddenly leave a safe environment without any awareness of the danger.
Just wander off.
Yes. They might be drawn to something intensely interesting like a body of water or train tracks, or they might be running away in a panic from a sensory trigger like a loud noise.
So they aren't trying to be disobedient.
Not at all. Their brain is simply compelling them to move, often without the ability to process the hazards of traffic or getting lost.
This is where the high-tech solutions really prove their worth. The guide highlights AngelSense specifically here. It's a sensory-friendly wearable location tool.
And it is robust.
Very. You get real-time alerts on your phone the exact second the individual leaves a designated safe zone, like the house or the schoolyard. It provides highly accurate GPS tracking and the ability to instantly share that live location data with local first responders.
Which saves precious minutes.
Plus, it has vital communication features built right into the GPS. A parent can literally open an auto-answer two-way audio line and speak to their nonverbal child through the device, calming them down while they're actively tracking them on the map.
That combination of highly accurate tracking and direct communication is critical during an elopement event. But as the guide rightly points out, the absolute best strategy for wandering is to prevent it from happening in the first place.
Which means relying heavily on low-tech, at-home safety tech.
Right. It's about creating a secure perimeter before they ever reach the front yard.
Door and window alarms that chime loudly when opened. Smart locks that require a specific code to exit from the inside.
Installing secure fencing around the yard.
And using physical barriers in front of doors, like a curtain or a heavy piece of furniture, to simply break the visual pathway to the exit. If they don't see the door, they might not be prompted to leave.
And we can't forget the human element. The text emphasizes that safety isn't just about electronic devices or deadbolts. It's about the ecosystem around the individual.
Meaning the community.
Exactly. It means having open communication with your neighbors, giving them a heads up about the potential for wandering so they can be an extra set of guys on the street. And it means equipping the child with a simple low-tech ID bracelet just in case they do get out and a stranger or a police officer finds them first.
So, assuming the home is physically safe and the daily routines are set, we finally arrive at the ultimate frontier.
Stepping out.
Going into the community and participating socially. If you've ever tried to get a neurotypical toddler out the door and through a crowded mall on a weekend, you know how chaotic it is.
Now multiply that cognitive load and sensory input by 10.
Leaving that controlled, predictable home environment massively increases the responsibility. And naturally, it spikes anxiety for everyone involved.
Preparation is everything in these scenarios. Families have to prep for the massive unpredictability of the outside world. And the tech available for this preparation phase is frankly remarkable.
It really is.
The source mentions social story apps, which allow individuals to read through a simple, structured narrative of exactly what to expect at the doctor's office or the grocery store before they ever leave the house.
I have to pause here because the VR-based rehearsal tools absolutely blew my mind.
It's incredible, isn't it?
The idea of using virtual reality to literally rehearse a life experience before you live it. Imagine putting on a headset and suddenly you're standing in the middle of a bustling grocery store. The fluorescent lights are buzzing above you, the checkout scanners are beeping, people are walking past.
All simulated.
Right. For an autistic individual, experiencing this in the safe, controlled environment of their own living room allows them to build a mental map and sensory tolerance.
It's like exposure therapy, but completely controlled.
By the time they actually set foot in the store in real life, their brain says, oh, I've been here before. I know where the exits are. I know how to handle this noise. That is using high tech in the most practical, life-enhancing way possible.
It is a brilliant application of technology. It turns the unknown into the known. And then once you are actually out in the community, you transition to relying on your in-the-moment tech.
Your navigational apps to avoid getting lost or deviated from the planned route.
Your noise control apps on your phone to manage the auditory environment through your headphones.
You constantly reference your visual schedule planners so the individual knows exactly what is happening next, eliminating the anxiety of the unknown.
And of course, you deploy that portable sensory kit we discussed earlier whenever a physical regulation tool is needed.
It provides what the research describes as a dual benefit. Obviously, these tools are directly supporting the autistic individual, giving them the scaffolding they need to engage socially, run errands, and experience the world.
But at the exact same time, they're giving the caregivers immense peace of mind.
Yes, a parent can actually breathe, lower their own shoulders, and maybe even enjoy the outing, knowing they have a reliable safety net in place.
That dual benefit is the perfect way to synthesize all of this information. If we step back and look at everything the Angel Sense Guide has laid out regarding everyday assistive technology, the core underlying message is very clear.
There's no single perfect solution that works for everyone.
Exactly. Finding the right combination of low, mid, and high-tech tools requires immense patience, a lot of trial and error, and most importantly, ongoing collaboration. It requires input from speech therapists, occupational educators, caregivers, and crucially, the autistic individual themselves.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? Why should you care about this deep dive if you don't have autism or don't currently have an autistic family member?
Because understanding this fundamental approach to accessibility changes how we view the world.
The goal of these everyday tools is never about controlling someone. It's never about limiting them or forcing them to conform to a neurotypical standard.
It's about opening doors.
It's about building confidence, fostering self-trust, and enabling daily success. When we see how customized tools can so drastically reduce cognitive load and anxiety for someone on the spectrum, it helps us all appreciate the sheer power of intentional, inclusive design in our everyday environments.
It proves that when we design our tools and our routines for accessibility, we reduce unnecessary friction. And reducing friction benefits human potential universally, regardless of your specific neurotype.
I couldn't agree more. Which brings us to our final thought for the day. I want to leave you with something to really mull over as you go about the rest of your week.
A provocative question.
Yes. If customized everyday assistive technology can so profoundly reduce a person's anxiety and cognitive load simply by adapting the sensory and organizational environment to their specific needs, how might adopting these exact same personalized design principles completely reshape the way we build our public spaces, our schools, and our corporate workplaces to improve the mental well-being of absolutely everyone?
It's a powerful and necessary question to consider.
It really is. Keep diving deep, keep asking those big questions, and we'll catch you next time.